Father Godfrey, yes. He was the one who baptized me. And he had, I think, 60, he was a missionary in the North for 67 years. And he died in his 90s in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And we visited him. He was chaplain at the hospital in 1962 in the Smithers Hospital when we visited him. And we had a nice visit together. He was really a very, very wonderful person. Everyone seemed to think very highly of him.
Did your mother and father, because the priest came once a month or at irregular intervals, did they get together as, did people get together as families to have worship services or something, or?
That I don't know. Mother was Anglican, mm-hmm. and she used to go to the little Anglican church in Telford mm-hmm. with Mrs. Goodwill and some of the other women, and I don't think they had services there every Sunday. Again, it was the curate or the minister in charge would travel around to other places. And I don't know whether perhaps some people gathered together for, you know, worship, but I haven't heard anything about it. Right. I suppose they just waited. Yeah. It's not like now. Now they do have a lot of lay participation and lay people conducting services. But I hadn't heard anything about that.
And in Smithers, when you moved to Smithers in 1913, now there used to be a big ditch going down Main Street.
Oh, yes. And with planks to cross it, and it wasn't filled with water, but it was just gooey. It had water in it, and scummy water with a lot of green scum on it, and I fell in once going across to Muriel's place and went home covered with green, this mud and this green scum. And Mother just was so horrified, she just picked me up and dumped me in the tub, just with clothes and all. And I was talking to Jean Kilpatrick, and she said her sons did the same thing. But they fell in because they were trying to jump across it, and I suppose some boys did try that and of course fell in, and they'd go home covered the way I was. And
this Muriel you were visiting, was that Muriel Adams?
Muriel Adams, yes. You have a picture in the museum of the two of us on swings in her backyard. I think I sent that to you. Each of us holding a doll. And
where did she live?
Well, she lived, Mason Adams Drugstore was where, there's a clothing store there now. It was really kitty corner from the old Interior News office, just across the ditch. And I don't know the name of the clothing store, but it's on the corner, and they have some figures now on the side of the building, miners or skiers or something.
Right.
It's that building.
And Central
there are
clothing.
Stairs. Yes, and there are stairs at the back in about the same position that the stairs were when the Adams lived there. They had the apartment upstairs. And he had a drugstore, I understand, in Hazelden and then in Telquet, too.
Now, your father was somewhat of a inventor, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, very much so. He had a very inventive turn of mind, and so he had several little inventions going, and then he developed the first egg carton because of the breakage of eggs at the hotel. There were complaints. Jack McNeil complained about the breakage of the eggs coming into the hotel, and Dad went home and invented this cushion-bottomed box where the eggs fitted in individual sections, and the bottom of the box was so arranged that the eggs didn't touch the bottom. They were cushioned.
And this is while he was in Aldermere?
This was, yes, in 1911. And so then he just, I suppose, handmade cartons for the local people as they wanted them, and then he thought it was worthwhile developing on a larger scale, so he sold the newspaper in 1918, and we went to Vancouver, where he got going in a rented space in a building and started production, and then got people interested and got a little money, and then went down to Los Angeles and started Los Angeles. During the early 20s, 21 to 24, and just around that time in the 20s, there was a severe depression, and it was a bad time to get a business going. So it took a while to get started. We went through a few bad years, a few lean years there. It was a bit of a gamble to start something like that. And then more money was invested in it, and then it kept expanding. The business lasted from 1911 until 1972, so even that was quite a record for one particular type of carton. And what really ended the business, and they could have, my brother had pretty well taken over by that time, because my father died in 72, of course, and it would have meant converting all the machinery into making the molded type, molded cartons came in, and then the plastic cartons, and my brother felt it was, the carton had seen its day, and it had done its service all those years, 1911 to 72, and so he went in for, took a course in geology at UBC, and then went in for, joined a mining exploration team, and that just suited him. He loved the outdoors, and he loved British Columbia, and the north.
Your father, with the egg carton that he started, at one point he sold the rights to it. Is that right? To
some? Yes, he did. It was the egg safety carton.
Yes.
Gradually, this Chicago promoter got more and more interest in it, until finally he had the controlling interest, and instead of having it the coil safety carton, it became just the egg safety carton. And so after, of course, we had we lived on royalties, so the royalties came in, so it was all right. But then Dad still wanted to be in the manufacturing line, so he developed another carton that was slightly different, and it was produced in Toronto by Collett Sproul. So that carton went on for a number of years in Canada, and then when he moved out to New Westminster, he brought the machinery, the egg carton assembling machine and other machines that he had, the punch press, and started up. We had a large house with a large cement basement, and had the machinery installed in the basement, and started a third carton going.
What was that one called?
Well, it was just the coil cartons, coil egg carton, and it lasted, as I say, until 72, and he had overweighted, and more and more, he really didn't expect it to expand so, but finally there was, he and my brother were working, and then they'd have two other fellows working part-time in order to supply the demand. So it was, and then as I say, the plastic cartons came in, and that was the end of it, and my dad had died, and my brother, that I don't remember. I do remember going to what we used to call Chicken Lake, and is now Lake Kathleen,
mm-hmm.
and going out on boats there, and I don't know who I went with or how I got there. I imagine it was by car, because by that time there were, you know, there were a few cars around. Some people had cars. And, there were always gatherings like that, always picnics, and Dad, we have old snapshots of Dad would go fishing. We'd go on fishing trips or berry picking trips, and there'd be not just the family, but a group, you know, other families going along too.
Yes, I saw a photo of your mother with a fishing rod over
yes,
her shoulder.
Yes. That was one of them, and I imagine that we did that frequently. You know, it was just a way of getting out, and of course going berry picking with a crowd. I can remember that very well, going raspberry picking. And,
where did you go raspberry picking?
Somewhere out, I don't know just where the location is outside of Smithers that we, it seemed to me we went right down Main Street and then over a hill, and there was a wooden bridge over either a river or a creek, and I used to sit on the bridge while the parents, my parents and the other people would be down below filling their pails with raspberries. And but I don't know just where it was. It was a good walk. But
did you ever go to Morristown in those days, or hear about Morristown?
No. I'm sure my father did, but I never did. We heard of it, but I was too little to, you know, Morristown didn't mean anything to me.
Right.
It was just my own little world around the Interior News and with my friends nearby.
Your father owned a ranch in Tatlow, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, he bought property, and I don't know whether the cabin was there or whether he built it, but they were there possibly for a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
But, they lived there, and there again I can have memories of Dad going fishing and catching salmon and cooking salmon on the shore, you know, on the land, and having kind of a picnic and smoking the salmon, or building a fire and having the salmon on sticks on a platform. And
your father had a brick kiln on this ranch?
Yes, there was blue clay there, and good clay for bricks. And there are old snapshots of him with the bricks, and the bricks are made, but whether Dad made them, he probably did at first, and then there was some other man who bought them, or who perhaps leased the land after Dad left and made bricks. I don't know who it was, but there is a picture in our album of a young woman in Vancouver. When they went down there, they met her, and she was the daughter of the, at the back, Dad made a notation, she was the daughter of the man who had the bricks on Dad's property. So perhaps he had a little business, but again, I don't know who the man was.